Hanka Rybková has been the executive director of the Czech Fulbright Commission since 1996 for the last 25 years. Ever since then, 1,000 Czech scholars traveled to the US and a similar amount came from the United States to the Czech Republic. So we are here today to discuss the 2,000 people, to talk about them, to talk about Mrs. Rybková's career, and also to discuss a little bit the challenges of the higher education in the region. Welcome in the Fulbright podcast.
Thank you, Veronika. Thank you for the welcome. Happy to be here.
We are actually sitting in your office for the listeners, by the way, which is an interesting, you know, studio for the podcast. So, Hanka, 2,000 people, do you know them all personally? Do you all remember them?
I remember most of them, I would say. And sure, I met all of them. With all the Czechs, since the very beginning of the program, we were personally interviewing all those who were applying for a Fulbright scholarship. And with the Americans, yes, we welcomed all of them here in the Czech Republic and then took care of them during their stay here. So, yes, I do remember most of them, and I certainly met all of them.
I can imagine, and I know that your application process is very thorough and there are many people evaluating the projects and its applicants. But yet, do you have some sort of like a gut feeling or common sense when you interview people? Because often maybe the, you know, the specialties they are, the majors they are studying might not be, you know, that you might not know them that well. But do you kind of feel, okay, this is going to be a great Fulbrighter based on your experience?
The review process has several levels, and of course, those people who are then sitting on the selection committee are not experts in all the fields in which we are interviewing. That's why, for especially the scholar category, we use expert reviews of people from the different fields. And based on those reviews, the selection committee tries to figure out not if the person is the right expert in the field, but that we are trying to figure out if the person would fit the Fulbright program. The main goal of the program is not only to bring back and forth the best scholars or the best students, but there is a bit more to it. The main motto of the program, in fact, talks about trying to get to know the nations,
right?
Which means that we are trying to export those people who would then make good impression of the Czech Republic in the US. And on the other hand, we are bringing in Americans who are, in fact, part of public diplomacy here in the Czech Republic, because not only they are working in their fields or on their projects, but at the same time, they are representing United States in the Czech Republic. And that part is the one that the selection committee is trying to figure out during the interviews. And we do live interviews. Of course,
sure.
This period with the pandemic shifted everything a little bit. And we were quite worried whether the way we interview people can be carried out in the online form. But I think that after this year's experience, we can say that there is no big difference for us in interviewing in person and online. I think that this main idea, that we are trying to look for the best representatives of the country to send to the other country,
it's
or
important.
To bring here.
It's very important.
That can be somehow found out during the interview.
When I interviewed a dozen of Fulbrighters for this podcast, there was often like a repetitive theme of a real passion, not only for their work, but also for the country as such, for the United States as such. So I was wondering if this is a common nominator for many of the applicants, that they just have to go to the US and study the major they love there.
I'm not 100% sure whether they have that passion already before they go. I certainly hope that most of them develop that passion after their stay in the United States and bring it back with them. And again, the same way, I hope that most of the Americans who visited the Czech Republic as Fulbrighters during all those years, in fact, the commission is 30 years old now.
Yes, yes.
So we hope that all those Americans have kept Czech Republic somewhere in their heart, and they still act as, in some way, representatives of that streak of being tied to the Czech Republic, even now, after years of being back in their homes.
You reminded me an important information, actually, that you are celebrating 25 years as an executive director, but in fact, you have been working for the Fulbright Commission ever since it started in the Czechoslovakia back then, which is 30 years. So you are basically having two anniversaries. Back in the 90s, like what were the biggest challenges after the Cold War? What were you facing back then?
We had all sorts of challenging. The very first one was that the Fulbright program, in fact, started even before the commission was founded here. And the processes through which the people were selected before the commission were quite different. I think that the whole image of the program, if there was any image, had to be somehow turned around, because it was something which certainly didn't carry open competition with it,
sure.
Which was more or less a secret for just
and
some people.
Transparency and openness and everything which the
exactly.
Democratic.
So the whole idea of making people understand that we select everyone through open competition, that it's a program where any networks don't help, and it's
somebody
just
who knows somebody.
Exactly. So that was one of the big challenges here in the Czech Republic. Of course, the other challenge here was to build the name of Fulbright. In the United States, being a Fulbrighter, that means something. It's almost a household name. Fulbright program is mentioned in books and songs, and everyone knows that it means quality and that it means that someone was selected through a thorough process to do something special. We were trying to build that image here, of course, from the very beginning. I just can hope that at least in the academic circles, this may be the case even in the Czech Republic now. And the whole idea of open competition was not so common here, certainly in the early 90s. We had to set up all the rules of selection. We had to set up the whole process.
The processes, yeah.
Which the application has to go. And we, in fact, could select some of the priorities. The Fulbright Board, which is the main body discussing the main ideas of the Fulbright program. It's a binational body, Czech and American, half and half. So that was discussing the priorities of the program from the very beginning. We knew that we would like to serve several several goals. One of them was trying to build up some of the fields which were not in good shape in the 90s, especially humanities. So one of my big challenges at that point was to make the American side understand that it makes sense to send someone who may have graduated in a totally different field to study or do research in another field. An example of that would be people who studied at my alma mater, Faculty of Mathematics and Physics at Charles University. And several of those people then went in the field of sociology, philosophy, religious studies, and so on.
After interviewing those Fulbright graduates of different ages, I found also another common denominator, that even within their majors, they often shift in the areas of interest.
Yes, there were many people, especially those who went there during their studies, who then in some ways shifted their focus. Some of them already were thinking about shifting their focus when they were going to the US. Some of them decided to do that after their stay in the US. But in almost all the cases, I would say the people, when learning about different ways of doing research, producing results, working with students, and so on, decided that they will slightly change their work, not to do it the American way, but because somehow their horizons broadened, they were able to look at the work they were doing up to the moment when they went to the US from above and figure out maybe some more creative ways of applying that after they came back to the Czech Republic. In most cases, the people, and I'm very happy about that, stayed in academia, and many of them became important figures. We are happy to see that many of the great researchers we sent over to the US became then leaders not only in their research field, but sometimes leaders of their universities or...
Sure. In management of the universities.
Exactly.
Yeah. You have several deans, if I'm not mistaken, and several
rectors,
right? We have
many deans, we have some rectors, we have lots of vice rectors within the Czech universities. And that's certainly something that makes me feel that in some way, even though the numbers are, of course, minimum compared to the number of people who work in academia here, we have in some way achieved something even in the field of internationalization of Czech universities.
Yes.
The people return back, they work in their field, and they understand that going abroad is an important moment in the career of anyone who wants to work in academic fields.
You talked about the kind of underdeveloped fields in a way affected by the politics, mainly the humanities on the beginning of 90s. What is the situation now? I mean, do you see a significant improvement?
There are differences in fields not only here. It's the same all over the world. I well understand that it's much more difficult to try to judge the quality of fields where producing articles is not the main aim of the researcher. There are more subtle ways how to judge how well the person is doing in some of the humanities and social sciences. The points that have been then the ones by which many researchers here are judged, whether they are doing well or not in their careers, cannot be applied the same way in all the fields. And I well understand that. On the other hand, the openness of some of the fields to being part of international science is still much larger than in the other fields.
Why is that?
I would say that still somehow some of the students in humanities and social sciences feel they are not ready to participate in international conferences, to publish some parts of their work at earlier stage, and they wait much longer. Their role models, their mentors at the universities also have a different style of work. But now when we are doing a selection of students from different fields, we know that if we are looking at students from hard sciences, again, let's shorten it, we can expect that those who are already studying at the PhD level would have some publications, would have several international experience, at least in the form of conferences and so on. While with the students of humanities and social sciences, that certainly would be rather rare. On the other hand, I want to stress that the changes are enormous. You can't compare the quality that was there at the universities in the 90s with the quality now. It has grown enormously. The quality of research the universities are producing is really incomparable to what we observed in those early
stages. 90s, yeah.
Research was done mainly at the Academy of Sciences. Universities were there mainly to teach. So the fact that Czech universities are able to combine teaching and research and lead the students in that direction now is a miracle for
Fantastic,
me.
Yeah.
So I'm certainly not trying to be too critical about this. Again, I hope that with some of the processes, even in the teaching part, we may have helped in some ways. Some of the things that are quite natural now, for example, students' voices in the judgment of the quality of lecturing of professors. That was something totally unknown in those years.
Was groundbreaking when it started.
When we brought in American professors and they requested feedback from the students, that was something totally surprising, both for the students, because they had no idea that someone would be interested in that, but even for the Czech colleagues at the universities.
What are the challenges right now, you know, after 25 years?
We concentrated in our discussion very much on the universities, but what I would like to stress is that the Fulbright program here has many faces. You've seen that when interviewing the people who have been Fulbrighters, that it's certainly not just the people from Czech universities, but there are many different types of Fulbright programs that we have developed throughout the years. And some of them operate at the secondary school level. Some of them try to focus on the non-governmental sector and so on. So the challenges are many, again, of course. And
challenges are great.
For us, one of our challenges here within the Fulbright Commission, that's the fact to try to figure out which programs in which ways could help to overcome some of the current challenges we have here. So at some point when we saw how difficult it is for Czech students to study English in a way that would really give them a good competence in speaking and living in English, we tried to bring some of the young Americans to act here as English teaching assistants at Czech secondary schools. That's what we are doing now on a larger scale. And with the help of the Ministry of Education, we are able to bring 30 or even more of such young Americans and try to help in that. During the pandemic, this program, of course, had to stop.
It was 30 every year, right? 30 every year.
At all sorts of Czech secondary school, we have these young Americans assisting in teaching English. They will be coming again, hopefully, in a normal way next year. Hopefully, they will be fully assisting as they have been in the previous years. But even in the meantime, we try to utilize the experience of our English teaching assistant alumni. So, for example, during this academic year, we put on some live lessons. We broadcasted them online. We put them on Facebook. We put them on our YouTube channel. And we try to help secondary schools prepare the students of the graduate years to prepare for maturita exam.
For the A level,
For the different topics that are somehow connected with the United States, we had some of the alumni of the program working with the students here online and then broadcasting it to other schools.
We started with an image of Fulbright, but sometimes it seems to me it has become so prestigious that I keep meeting, you know, young students saying, oh, Fulbright, no, I would never be able to apply for it because they would never accept me because I'm simply, you know, not good enough. I mean, aren't you sort of a bit scared of like making it even like almost like too unachievable for the Czechs?
Well, we are certainly trying not to do that as much as we can. And I certainly think that in the last months, we may have tried to adopt some new ways of spreading this word, specific one. Fulbright could be for anyone, and it certainly is not only for those from the best Czech universities.
Geniuses, yeah.
But it can be for any people who put enough effort into creating a project. We are very happy to consult with people while they are putting together their applications. In the last months, as we are doing our workshops about the different types of stipends online, we think that we have been more successful in having the audience from all over the Czech Republic.
I see. Not only Prague-centered or some big city.
We never are Prague-centered totally. We try to do outreach at different universities, at different institutions within the Czech Republic. But still, if we go somewhere, it means that just a few people come to listen to our workshop about how to apply and what to do and how to consult with us. We feel that the webinars we have been doing have had a broader impact in this sense. And because we are going to keep them online, there are more and more people who can go through them even afterwards. And we hope that through this, we will show that we are approachable, that we are happy to consult even the basic stages of the ideas, and maybe try to work with the people for a longer period of time than just the few months or weeks before the application deadline. There have been many people who applied once, didn't succeed, but may have succeeded the next year.
I see.
Because they evolved the project in a way that it was successful. When, for example, the foreign experts were then reviewing the application. We hope that this idea that it can be anyone who is applying, and we will try to help anyone to reach the full potential through consulting the ideas that they then put in the applications, that will show that we are open to really many people, and that we will have more applications than we have had in the previous years. I am not complaining that we don't have enough applications, but sure, there are years, it's going up and down. Sometimes there is no way to tell why, but there are years when it's just easier, and then there are years when it's more difficult to do the selections. But we certainly hope that the idea that this is just for the top elite will not be the main image of the Fulbright program, because the difference in our programs is really enormous, and with many of them we are not aiming at the highest excellence in that field, but we may be aiming at the best way to help build civil society.
Sure.
With some of the scholarships and so on. And it's then so wonderful to see when they come back full of that new experience, seeing them put it in work in their field. You mentioned the street worker who is now doing fantastic programs here in Prague with the kids, applying that experience and his knowledge about social work and about activities that could be done. And to see then the results of those who have been affected by that work is just a dream come true.
Okay, Hanka, thank you very much for the interview. Thank you very much for accepting the invitation. And I hope to talk to you, maybe next year in the next Fulbright series. Thank you very much.
Thank you.